Welcome to Bridge the Gap with host Josh and Lucas, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors, powered by Markentum.
Welcome to Bridge the Gap podcast, a podcast for senior living. I am Lucas McCurdy, the senior living fan, here with my co-host, Joshua Chris. Hey, Josh, what's going on, man?
Lucas, it's good to talk with you. Glad to be on another episode of Bridge the Gap. Our listener audience is growing and love that we have the loyalty. It's good to be here with you. Great lineup today. Great topic. So look forward to chatting.
Excellent. Excellent. So our esteemed guest today, as we continue to roll through our love for senior living and connect with other passionate people, we are very fortunate to welcome Susanna Meyerson. Susanna, hi, how are you?
Hey guys, I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you so much. Well, Susanna and I, as well as Josh, we've connected at a lot of the NIC conferences, and I have admired her from afar, and so now I've been able to formally meet her and just gotten to know a little bit more about her and her life and really what drives her. And it was just a natural progression and next right step to invite her on the podcast, because I really do believe that she has a lot of value to the industry and she's got a lot of great insights. So Susanna, tell us and tell our listeners just a little bit about you and your background and what got you to having the love for the senior living industry today.
Sure. I've been in the senior housing space for, gosh, probably 18 years now. I started in about 2000, and I started out my career just in real estate finance, kind of commercial real estate in general, buying office buildings and multifamily buildings and regional malls. And the company I was working for, we were investigating purchasing a couple senior housing facilities. And of course, I was like the 21-year-old kid out of college. They said, "Susanna, you go figure out this senior housing nonsense and see if it makes any sense." And as I started digging into it, I realized it was such a more interesting industry than, frankly, buying an office building or buying a multifamily building. Senior housing kind of had all the things that I liked. It had, residents, of course. It had, some healthcare. It had hospitality. So I jumped in and I started learning more about senior housing. And then I got the opportunity to go work for a senior housing developer and operator that was based in Arizona. And I grew up on the East Coast. And so I, took this job to move to Tucson, Arizona. And my friends thought I had lost my mind. And they said, "Oh, you'll be back in a year, tops." And, they didn't think I'd like Tucson, small little college town. And they didn't think I'd like senior housing. "Oh, you'll be back to the commercial real estate field, And now that was 2000. So here it is, 2018. I'm still in the senior housing space. So that's kind of how I got roped into senior housing. And I've been on essentially all sides. I mean, maybe not all sides, but three distinct sides. I worked for about 10 years for an operator and developer. And then I worked on the consulting side, helping operators and developers, with their projects, figure out if their projects made sense. And now I work on the third side. Essentially, I work for a lender and I lend money to senior housing developers. So I kind of tell people that I've sat in three different chairs and kind of can understand the aspects of each part of that.
Very interesting. So, Josh, you have a pretty diverse background in seniors as well. Hearing that probably for the first time, what bubbles up in your mind about that background of experience?
Well, it's awesome. So I don't have the trilogy of experiences you just explained. I've mainly been on the operating side of it. And because of it's such an operator-centric business, I've had the great opportunity to be able to be part of seeing how you identify a market, how you identify a site, and how you approach a lender, and how you package a deal and develop a deal. So I have a great appreciation for all of Susanna's experience. And so I'm looking forward to kind of talking more about kind of each aspect of that. I know in today's short episode. We don't have time to dissect a lot of that, but it's fascinating to me, and what a great asset to have that unique perspective on all sides.
So, Susanna, you know, with that background, what do you think, especially working for one of the top 10 operators, how has that shaped your approach to financing as you know it right now?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, you basically, you know, we look for, I work for Wells Fargo Bank, and we are, you know, financing a lot of the top operators in the space, and kind of in a lot of the major markets. You know, we look for kind of infill, you know, main site locations, really strong operators. You know, we really look for kind of things that check all the boxes. It's a strong market. It's a strong operator. You know, it's a good product. You know, I think there are a lot of new things coming out in the industry too, but you know, we, at least for the most part, we kind of stick with, you know, the tried and true, kind of what's working, what's worked in the past, and really good locations.
Excellent. That makes sense. So Josh, you know, you've been on that other side and been through some of the real life challenges of navigating the finance. I'm sure that you've got some 2 cents to give there.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it would be probably less than 2 cents, but you know, I do have some great questions. So for me, this is a great learning experience to be able to have this much time with Susanna without sitting across the desk and actually trying to present a deal that gets dissected. So, you know, this, I think it's fascinating right now what's happening in the industry. And Susanna, you probably have a unique perspective on this, but my personal feeling is, you know, we're obviously, I've only been in the industry for about 13 years now, and it's changed so much during that 13 years. And you know, what I'm seeing is it has a lot more change as the next generation of seniors are coming, and nobody really knows exactly what that looks like. I think everyone's trying to forecast that. And I know there's several of us, me included, that are trying to say, okay, you know, we know that lifestyle preferences of the next generation are a lot different in many cases. We know affordability is going to be an issue. So there's all these factors that are converging, and you put that box beside the senior housing box now, if you will, you know, like, wow, these may radically need to change. And what, you know, I'm curious to know your insight on, because you've had that multifaceted approach, is one of the real challenges I see is, you know, we're working with designers, we're working with developers, and we can create, you know, these really good models that are appealing to people that have the right apartment styles. They're in the right markets. They're in the right positions. They have the right amenity packages. And so they're interesting to the people. And when you look at it on a pro forma, you think, wow, okay, an operating pro forma, this makes sense. And then you start looking at, oh my gosh, you know, if we're talking about multi-generational housing, this touches several different silos of finance, you know, and silos is not the right term, but I think you know what I'm saying. But how do we get that funded? How do we package this deal? So what on your side, because you've had a lot of different sides, but put on your lender hat for a minute and on your finance hat, you know, what are you all talking about the next generation looking like, even though you're focused on lending right now? What's that conversation look like that may be different from what just an operator or developer is looking at it from?
Sure. You know, I think flexibility is probably the key word I'd use. You know, you don't want to necessarily build a community that's got maybe designated rooms for certain activities. But if you can build a community that's got a common area room that could be something in the morning and then something else in the evening, I think that, you know, lends a lot to the success of a community, and is something we would look at. And then just in terms of flexibility too, in terms of, you know, we'll see a lot. Sometimes someone will have, let's say it's a 100 unit AL memory care, you know, 80 units of AL, 20 units of memory care. Well, if it's built in such a way that you could make it in the future 60 units of AL and 40 units of memory care, or even flip it the other way, you know, maybe it becomes 40 units of AL and 60 units of memory care. I mean, I think, you know, the flexibility in programming and in unit mix is really a good thing, because as you mentioned, you know, things are going to constantly change. You know, what's built today 10 years from now may be outdated. You know, so I think that's what the advice I would give to developers is to build some flexibility into your, not only your building plans, but also into your programming space. And you know, that would be what I would say.
I think that's great advice. So, are you seeing that? Are you seeing that actually the developers and the operators are working now to create communities that have the flexibility in space and what I would call, you know, convertible space to where they can stay relevant with the changing times, given that I think we know a lot and we can forecast, but there's also just so many unknowns. Are you seeing people actively doing that?
We are. Yeah, we're seeing people do kind of what I said, you know, have a their starting unit mix is maybe going to be 80-20, 80 AL, 20 memory care, but they've made a secondary, what could be a secondary memory care wing. You know, maybe they've kind of made a common area space that's got an additional country kitchen, so that they could then close off that and have another 20 unit memory care wing. So that 2, 3, 5 years from now, they could go from 80-20 assisted memory to 60-40 assisted memory and have two distinct memory care neighborhoods. We're also seeing, I've seen some operators that we work with kind of build in classroom and meeting space on their campus or in their facility. And, you know, that can be used obviously for the residents to have a, you know, game or craft or whatever. It can also be used for students if they're, you know, going to partner with a local university or even a high school or something. And then it can also be used for like the, you know, the Rotary Club or the, you know, any local community organization. So you could potentially have a classroom or a meeting room space be used by three different groups over the course of the day. You know, maybe the residents themselves are using it in the morning for some kind of game. And then, you know, after school, you've got a bunch of high school kids in there who are coming to learn about senior housing. And then, you know, in the evening, you've got the Rotary or the Kiwanis Club coming in to use that meeting space. So that's the type of thing we're seeing some operators do, which I think is great.
Yeah, so I think that's a great point. You know, Lucas, we've been talking on some of our podcasts about flexibility and space for employees, right? Because the workforce is also changing. You know, we're thinking about on the resident side, but we're also thinking on the employment side. So that's great. It's encouraging to know that a lot of operators, the big operators, like what you've been talking to, are doing that. I'm also curious, you know, you see a lot of feasibility studies, you see a lot of market analysis. I've started seeing some of the feasibility studies. I'd say in my short career, I've probably seen at least 200 or 300 market studies in secondary to tertiary to primary markets. How are you seeing any changes in the approach to feasibility and site selection and market analysis? How do you think that's going to change? Is it going to change?
Yeah, that's a really good question too. And I think one of the things I've seen recently is you guys probably maybe have talked about this even, there's been a rise in the development of age-restricted apartments. So apartments with no services, but that are, you know, 55 plus. There are a couple big companies out there right now who are developing these. And used to be that market studies would kind of ignore those. They'd say, well, they're not really competitive. But the market studies I've seen recently are now taking those into account. And I think they should. I think that's right to do that, to take into account the 55 plus age-restricted apartments that are, you know, nice, that are upscale, that would be comparable to, say, an independent living facility. And, you know, some would argue, well, you don't get meals, you don't have, you know, transportation. But I think with the rise in, you know, seniors using Uber, seniors using Lyft, seniors using Grubhub for food delivery, you know, I think those age-restricted apartments are a definite, should definitely be included in a market analysis. Because someone, yes. You know, Mrs. Jones could go there and lease an apartment for probably half the price of an independent living, and then it would, the onus would be on her to bring, to kind of get all the other services. But I think it's definitely a competitor.
Well, I think there's a, I think you hit the nail on the head, and I'm seeing that as well. And we're actually requesting, you know, that our, the market study third party companies that we partner with, if they're not doing that, we're asking them to take that into account. I think there's a lot of other factors other than just preferences, kind of pushing that popularity. You know, with the acuity that has risen in our industry, particularly I've marked it since and noticed it since after 2008, a massive change in the traditional kind of senior living setting. With that sure. rise in acuity and cost going up and the regulatory environment trying to catch up with that acuity, I think what it's doing is forcing a lot of traditional senior living developers to go downstream, so to speak. And to develop in a lot less regulated environment and to coordinate in a lot of the traditional services that would have been delivered into and through a, maybe say an assisted living community. So people are able to stay in that environment, oftentimes more affordably, because it's able to be developed more affordably oftentimes. And then, with less restrictions. And I think people could argue whether that's a good thing or a bad thing sometimes, but I think that's exactly right. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you think there might be more of that kind of stuff taking place?
I do. I think, I mean, we're certainly seeing it in a lot of the markets we're in, you know, especially kind of the more urban markets where, you know, you can get age-restricted apartments probably through the entitlement process easier than you can maybe a senior housing facility. And then, if it's in an urban environment, if it's in a, you know, New York or DC or, you know, somewhere, seniors are used to kind of ordering services on their own anyway. And, you know, maybe they've lived in a condo their whole life and sent out their dry cleaning and ordered food and ordered rides. So I think we are certainly seeing that more around the country.
So, Lucas, I always love that you and I have a much different perspective, and now we've got a third perspective here. You come at this from a construction side, and that's your background. I'm sure, especially in your business of renovating communities, there's a lot of opportunity, I think, and I'd be interested to know Susanna's perspective, but I think I know the answer because she was talking about flexibility and convertible space. So there's going to be a lot of repurposing or taking the old and making it new or making it more relevant for the future. What are you seeing on your side of the business?
Yeah, I mean, you know, candidly and maybe a little bit selfishly, that excites me for several different reasons because we love the industry and the work that we do, but the opportunity that's coming to take older legacy properties, newly acquired properties that need to be repositioned. And so talking about the next generation and the next phase of what senior housing looks like and all of these new ideas and features really excites me because it's going to allow me and our company to do a little bit more than your standard turn with carpet and paint and maybe moving a few walls and you know, changing a couple of spaces. And occasionally we do get into some major construction and repurposing, but I think that coming in the future we're going to really get to flex a lot of muscle as the market is going to demand it, and a lot of these buildings are going to need to be repurposed, and there may be even some other assets that get repurposed. Retail is a big topic right now. I've been reading about that. I have some close friends that are very, very heavy in the retail plaza business, And they absolutely think that those major malls, strip centers, are going to be repurposed to other things. And so maybe that would be in the future, even an avenue that I would get into. But I think there's a lot of exciting things coming up. And for for the sake of time, I know, Susanna, that one of the big exciting things that you've been involved with are some of your initiatives that you've worked hand in hand with Nick and Connect the Ages with Amanda Cavallari as well. And I love the fact that you don't just want to just come to the conferences, make the deals, and just kind of hold all your knowledge in. You actually are giving and recruiting people into the business. So tell us a little bit about your experience of going out to these universities and being, getting your soapbox out and talking about your love and passion for the industry to bring awareness.
Sure. Yeah, that's something I got involved with through Nick, as you said. I've done it twice now at the U of A. So I live in Tucson, as I mentioned, and I live about 15 minutes from the University of Arizona, which is a pretty big school. I had to kind of find my way into different departments talk to some of the professors. But I've found that they're very receptive to, I say, hey, I want to come in and talk to your class about senior housing. And sure, come on in. And these kids, I call them kids because they're 20 years old, they have no, unless they've had a family member who has lived in an assisted living facility, they really have no concept of senior housing and what a huge industry it is. And frankly, what a multi-million-dollar business, one facility can be. I mean, I kind of throw up on the whiteboard, okay, let's say you have 100 residents and, they're all paying, $5,000 a month. And, I basically do really simple math to show them that, it's a huge business, and it's one facility is a multi-million dollar revenue generator and multi-million dollar net operating income. And their eyes kind of go like, whoa, they had no idea that this was, that big a business. And I've talked to them about, hey, there are so many different career paths in senior housing. If you're interested in caregiving or in aging services, that's an opportunity for you. If you're interested in construction and development, that's an opportunity for you. If you're interested in finance and accounting, that's an opportunity for you. And I've had really good experiences speaking to students. And I know that other folks that I'm friends with through Nick and through the Future Leaders Council have gone out to their own, either their local universities or their, universities where they graduated from. And they tell me they have similar experiences, that the kids are just, their eyes are wide open. They had no idea this was an industry. They had no idea that it was kind of as exciting as it is. I mean, I guess we do a good sales job, right, on selling the industry. But they, after we talk, they're like, wow, this is really cool. It involves, so many different things. And I've had several kids then follow up and say, I want to find out more. And, are there internships available and all these kind of things.
Yeah. So Susanna, I totally agree with you. So we have the awesome opportunity on Bridge the Gap to be able to talk to some folks like you that are getting outside the box, giving back, educating the industry. And I firmly believe, I've talked to Lucas about this. We talk about this almost every episode. It seems like we have to tell our story. We create so many great love stories, as I've shared in our space. We don't do a good job of telling them. So we're creating the love stories. We need to talk about the love stories. And it's fascinating to me. Yes, you're exactly right. There's a huge business opportunity. And it's growing with the aging population. It's going to be very diversified. And there's so many various opportunities other than just the traditional senior housing community to get involved. But I also think we have an extra reward because people that get in this business for the right reason and the right why, which we haven't even heard exactly all of your why yet. Our listeners haven't, but me and Lucas know your why. And when people get in it for the right reason and are savvy business people, there's a really great opportunity, and that genuineness is what our industry needs. So we appreciate all that you're doing And I know Lucas is thinking, Josh, you're a broken record because you talk about, we need to be telling our story better every single time.
Yeah.
Hey.
Well, and I'll tell you, to answer your question about my why, I mean, certainly I mentioned, you know, that I, once I got into it, it was much more exciting asset class, I think, to me personally. It had more moving parts, you know, than just a standard apartment building that you'd buy or a standard office building. Certainly senior housing had more moving parts, and I'm a person who likes to do puzzles. And so, like, you know, would you rather have a 50-piece puzzle or would you rather have a 200-piece puzzle? I'd rather have a 200-piece, you know, like, so that's one part of the why. But the other part of the why is, you know, one of my favorite all-time memories, and I mean, frankly, it was years and years of memories. I used to spend a month every summer with my grandparents, and my grandmother was, God bless her, all 4'10" of her. She was this little tiny woman, but, you know, spitfire, and she would play with, I mean, all month long. I was an only child, so it was just me going down to spend the summer with my grandparents, and we'd go, I mean, there was nothing she wouldn't do. Like I said, she was 4'10", but I'd say, Grandma, let's go play basketball. She'd be out there playing basketball and taking me to mini golf and taking me swimming and, you know, just taking me everywhere. So I've spent probably from the time I was about 6 to the time I was probably 15, you know, till I was old enough to get a summer job. I spent a month every summer with my grandmother in Raleigh, North Carolina. So I'm a big Tar Heel fan. I know you guys are from the South, so don't hold that against me. But anyway, and once I got into senior housing, and my grandmother passed several years ago, but once I got into senior housing and started going to visit communities, I'd go and talk to these women who lived in the communities, and it was like, oh my God, I get to hang out with grandmas all day. Like, this is the best thing ever. You know, not only is it a fun business, but, you know, I get to walk around the communities and, like, you know, chit chat with people like my grandma. So
that's, I love it.
Yeah.
We love it. And Susanna, we love you at Bridge the Gap. and I'm so thankful that you're telling that story. Thank you for going out to the universities. And, you know, it matches up with our mission and our why, Josh and I and our partners with Bridge the Gap. It's why we do this and to continue this conversation and this narrative. And so, Susanna, thank you for spending time with us today. I know that this was just a brief moment where we get a little bit into your life and your expertise. And so we'll make sure that we connect with you in the show notes. We'll take it to social media. And for our listeners, if they want to engage and ask questions, we encourage them to do that there. We'll make sure that we follow up and get back. So, Susanna, I look forward to seeing you again at probably
a
NIC conference or something like that. Just again, we're very, very grateful. Josh, thank you for chiming in. I know you this helped make it a really great conversation. So thank you all for listening to another great episode of Bridge the Gap.